Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Claudia Monticelli with another episode of Multiple Voices. My Multiple Voices podcast, true to its name, includes different series. For example, we have the Voices of Love, where we discuss relationships, the voice of empowerment, the voice of laughter and play, the voice of pleasure, and the magical voice of archetypes and how they change the way we live. But we also have the voice of memory that includes everything from history to discussions of past life regression. There's also writing voices, where we interview both seasoned writers and authors who have just started getting their feet wet with writing, and we learn what can work for you as potential writers. Our series called Voice of the Spirit discusses different forms of spirituality and religion. And then Channeling Voices is a series that covers what happens when you channel, but is also extended to mediumship. Take a moment to review this podcast if you've enjoyed listening, and leave a hearty 5 stars. I'd appreciate it. Enjoy your listening. Hello, 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 ladies and gentlemen. It's me again. I almost think that it's a threat when I say that's me again. But I'm here today with Margaret Agard. And Margaret is a special guest because she has a special story. She's talking to us from Florida in the United States. And welcome. First, let me say welcome, Margaret.
Hi, Claudia. Happy to be here.
Good. I'm so glad that you did have time to talk to us. Margaret Agard is an award-winning writer, and she's the author of 2 memoirs, and she has a third on the way. She's a former executive in the high-tech industry. She's an author, speaker, mother of 8. When I read that, I thought, here I am with 2 children, and I thought I was overwhelmed, but I can understand. She's a Christian mystic, we'll talk about that, and a Reiki healer. Margaret focuses on helping others tame their overwhelming to-do lists and finding true purpose by turning their to-do lists over to God, Spirit, and an inner voice. So, Margaret, if you don't mind, can we start with talking about this idea of mysticism, a Christian mystic? Is a Christian mystic different from other mystics? And what is this mysticism?
For me, Christian mystic is a person who seeks to live their life in the presence of God and listening for that inner voice. That is the goal of a Christian mystic. And that's my goal. How do I constantly be in the presence of God, be hearing his, and I'll call him his because that's just my habit, voice, and allowing my life to be directed that way.
Now, before we started recording, you said there were a number of things that you had written to me, and you said, well, there is something that happened that changed my life, and this is why I'm doing what I'm doing. And I thought to myself, okay, now what are you doing? And what was it that changed your life?
When my life was overwhelming at one point, single mom, sole financial support of the family, 8 kids, working full time, and I had gone back to university to finish my last 2 semesters. And so I was like, I know how to set priorities and make lists, but it wasn't working for me. And so at that point, I was used to hearing God's voice occasionally.
All right, hold on. Wait.
Directing me.
I'll interrupt you. When you said I was used to hearing, what did that exactly, can you describe it? What exactly happened? Was it a voice or was it a sensation?
Well, when I first started, I was thinking about this the other day because people ask.
Yeah.
At first, I would just feel a sense of peace.
Yes.
And, you know, and so it grew. So and I would get impressions. I would just call them impressions.
Oh, what do you mean by these
impressions? I might be just think, oh, maybe I should go over there. And wherever it was, I'd go, you know, and something would happen. But after a while, I began to recognize a thought in my head that was words, the way we think in our
heads.
Yes. You know, like when we're trying to meditate, we're like, quiet up there. Okay. So one of those voices in my head, I began to recognize as the divine. And it often is telling me something to do that doesn't always make sense, but it's never a bad thing.
Give me an example.
Oh my gosh, it just happened the other day because I didn't listen. So that's why I remember it. Because as practiced as I am at this, sometimes I don't listen. I was staying at my son's house and I was taking his granddaughter to go over to visit her grandmother in an assisted living center. And as I was leaving, I thought, oh, I should put my luggage in the car. And then I thought, nah, when I bring her back, I'll get the luggage. And I thought it three times. This often happens. I think it three times. And the third time is when I think, oh, wait. I think this is God. But I didn't. And so after we went, I took her to visit her grandmother, her other grandmother, and her mom came and said, I think we'll just go to the store. So she'll leave with me. And so I said, okay, I'll just go right to the airport, having forgotten that I didn't have my luggage. Oh. My luggage is still at my son's house because the airport was too far away. And so, yes. And then it's like, oh, wait. I mean, I don't need that stuff. I have stuff at home, right? But wait, my car keys are in the luggage.
Oh.
So, oh my gosh, what a mess. And other times I do listen, but it is like that. I have a thought.
Yeah.
And the thought comes back more than once.
Yeah.
Like when you're leaving the house, you know, but what had happened when I started doing this.
When you say this,
this is when I began turning my life over to the divine.
Okay.
By turning my to-do list over. I would just sit in the morning with my list. Here's what I'm planning to do today. And just pay attention to that small voice that I had by this time learned how to discern.
Yeah.
And I would think, oh, you don't need to do this. You don't need to do this, but do this. And sometimes would add something, like call a certain person or take a meal to someone. And those times have been fulfilling because, you know, I've called people when they were in so much stress. I called a cousin once, not a lot of cousins.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people. Mm-hmm. So when a thought comes, call this particular cousin who I never call. Okay. We see each other at reunions. I never call. And then I call her and she can hardly talk because she's so upset. She said, Margaret, I was just starting to breathe into a paper bag. You know how you're like,
yes.
So I have those kinds of experiences where I know that someone needs help and God is directing me to be the person to help.
Okay. Now, let's just backtrack a little bit because we did mention that you have written two memoirs. Were they also guided or was this before you started having these conversations or the listening to these voices?
So the first one I just think of as the to-do list. And what had happened is at one point the thought came, I want you to write your life on the internet. Now, this is back in 1999.
Okay, so we're talking, that was the first.
20-some years ago.
Okay.
So not a lot of blogs.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm like writing. I found a place. It was called Open Diary where you could write.
Mm-hmm.
And I started writing what was happening in my life. Oh, I felt prompted to go do this today. Or this is what happened to me today. I doubted that little voice today, and guess what? I should have listened. And after about 2 years of that, the thought came, write a book about this. And so I started to try to gather it and figure out how to write it. And it was like, no, the book is written. Just go through all those things that you've written up on the internet and on this private site and find the ones that are around the subject, which is what I did. So that was the first book. So in a sense, I was guided, like, do this. Mm-hmm. And then.
But they were your words and your writing. Okay.
Yes, it was not. No,
it was not channeled.
It's definitely me. I wasn't channeling anything.
Okay.
Unless you want to channel Sarcastic Jersey Girl. Yeah, I channel her a lot.
I hear you. I'm from Jersey.
I was listening to your voice and I said, she sure sounds like she's from Jersey.
Grew up right in Jersey. Yeah. Northern Jersey. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I revalue. When I was there, I'm thinking, oh, I don't like this place. You know, any place else. There are mountains, there are beaches. There's everything you want. You can go skiing. You can go to the beach. It is a garden state. So now we're at the second memoir. What's the name of the first book?
They're both called In His Footsteps. And the first one is In His Footsteps, I Gave My To-Do List to God.
That's okay.
More done, more sleep, less stress. The second one is In His Footsteps, Missions. So we sold all we sold all we had and followed as God changed hearts and created miracles. So it was almost like up to then I was giving most of my life to God.
Yeah.
But going on the missions was you have all day. You've got all day, God. Whatever you want us to do, we're doing. And that was an amazing experience.
So tell me the age of your youngest child today so I can get it.
Oh, today?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. She just turned 40.
Oh, okay.
I mean, in the book, I mean, it was 20-some years ago, right? Like in 1990. He's like, he is just.
You must have had these so young.
Yeah, my first one was born when I was 20.
Okay.
And I had them in 11 years.
Oh, my God.
Because
oh my God.
My mom had a big family, but she had her last one at 42. And I thought, yeah, I'm not doing that. So we had eight in 11 years. And that was before the first one became a teenager. So we didn't know.
Oh, that's right.
It's coming.
Yeah. Ignorance is not bliss.
No, that was fun. But now they're all older and they're all so secure and, you know, yeah. Doing well.
So. Well, this is an accomplishment. So now you said a third book is on the way. Is that also guided?
I had always thought that I would have three books. And the first one the first one was my relationship with God.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought of that as faith. And the second one was going out and
being on the mission,
people, this kind of sense.
Right.
Yes. And the third one is about my husband. It's a second marriage. My first marriage had ended.
Yeah.
I was a single mom. And I would say that was a God-directed marriage. And so you think, well, a match made in heaven, right? This should be great. This was not great.
Oh, God, no.
We were two wounded people.
I'm afraid. I'm afraid to ask.
Okay. So, I mean, he had an alcoholic, abusive father, very, very touchy. I had my fears. And at one point, we'd only been married maybe 6 months. And I was just thinking, you know, we don't have kids. We don't have to. I could just end this anytime. If I'm really supposed to be in this marriage, I need something to hang on to. I need a promise. Give me a scripture. I don't care. And the thought came, all will be made whole as a result of this marriage. And in the Christian world, in the biblical verses where Christ talks about making people whole, that word, if you look at the basis, is they are made whole spiritually and emotionally, not just physically. So he would say to the woman who is bleeding, thy faith hath made thee whole.
Yeah.
He's referring to her spiritual and emotional wellness as well.
Yeah.
So that promise to me was, you know, my children were struggling. They struggle after a divorce.
Right.
His children had some struggles. We definitely had our struggles. And so this promise, all would be made whole as a result of this marriage, is what kept me
going
and looking for healing.
Well, wait, now, like, when was that, when you heard this all will be made whole? What year? Give me a time range.
It's back in that same time. It was all kind of happening 99? At the same time. Yeah, we got married in 97.
Uh-huh.
Oh, so it was actually happened in 98.
Uh-huh.
That I got that answer.
Are you still together?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Ah.
We're about to celebrate our 25th anniversary.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, we got married in 97.
Late. Yeah.
So, yeah. So we're celebrating. And
well,
much.
Interesting. Now, there's a very strong element of faith there. A very strong element of faith, in the sense that when things are going and in the face of crises and all of the rest, when you are suffering, because it's suffering, mental yeah. torture, mental abuse, if it's not physical, it's mental, or even both. When you come out with this thought, or when it's guided to you, it's an act of faith. And you then were rewarded, I can see from what you're explaining. Let's leave the idea of the to-do lists and being overwhelmed. And let's just go one step forward. Okay, so we're talking today. But what about the future? Do you have a dream that you still want to accomplish, or are you waiting for guidance about that?
I was told more than once, I've been told to do something mm-hmm. that I don't know how to do.
Yeah.
And
give me an example.
So a friend's house burned down. She didn't have insurance.
Oh.
And it was, you know, one day I'm sitting at church and, you know, the church had bought her an RV. She was living in that. We're kind of waiting for her to solve the problem.
Yeah.
I mean, she had an income and stuff. But I'm sitting in the church one day and God's like, build her a house. And I thought, you know, I don't have a clue. So, I mean, I was like, well, I guess we'll figure out how to do that. And so, you know, I went out and got all kinds of donations, material donations, got people to work on it, took a year and a half. I just would be each week. And I, you know, could talk with God then. And at one point I said, why do you always send the stuff just at the last minute? I would feel a lot more comfortable if it was coming, you know, like a few weeks
in advance. Prepare me.
Okay. Yes. Like, I don't want to have to wait for the roof trusses and they tell me on Monday they're going to deliver it the next Saturday when I'm like sweating it. Okay. Yeah. And the answer was so obvious. He's like, Margaret, you live in West Virginia where people steal stuff all the time. I don't want that laying up on her property. I was like, I will get it to you when you can
need
use it.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yes.
So I get things like that, but also smaller things. Now, for my own personal future, it was, I want you to make this book a bestseller. Well, I've done everything I know how to do. That's when I know God steps in. Mm-hmm. When I've done everything I know how to do, mm-hmm. and then he says, you're ready, it's going to happen now, then something happens. That happened with our business. Mm-hmm. I had a business. We were selling a Bible product online. Mm-hmm. And it was time to stop doing it. Mm-hmm. So we built it up. You know, it was a little $20 product.
What do you mean it was time to stop doing that? Why?
Because I was supposed to be working on this message
uh-huh.
and those books. Mm-hmm. And I was spending too much time on that business. Mm. And I was maybe making in profit about $75,000 a year. Uh-huh. On it. It's just a little home-based business.
Yeah.
And I started making it so that we could step back. We could sell it
right.
to someone.
Right.
Yeah. And my husband's like, no, no. And after about a year.
When is this? What year?
This was 2016.
Okay.
And so 6 years ago. And I had people working for me, mm-hmm. single moms usually.
Yeah.
And I thought, all of a sudden the business started tanking, like down.
Oh.
Down.
Oh.
Yeah. During the time of year when it usually took off.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, one way or the other, I'm going to stop doing this business so I can focus on the books and this message about going to God. How you give your life to God is give your day to God. That's how you do it. Mm-hmm. And so finally, my husband agreed to sell the business if we moved to Florida.
That's like the deal. Wow.
Well, it was more like this. I want to move to Florida. How are we going to do that? Well, we'll take the money from when we sell the business. We're selling the business? Yes, fine. That day, he signed a contract.
Oh.
And our business is tanking. And so I did the whole, what do you call it, where you are going to manifest something.
Yes.
Okay. So there's a difference between manifesting and faith. So for manifesting, I was like, this is how much I need. If I can't sell the business, if it's tanking, right?
Yeah.
So I need the business to start making a little more money than last year. So I have this card. I wish I should have brought it with me.
It doesn't matter.
To you. On it, I started writing. In October, I need this. In November, I need this. That's what I'm writing.
A to-do list. Like, a to-do list for
God. 20,000 in sales, yeah. 30,000 yeah. in sales, like that, right? And so I heard that voice say, don't limit me.
Oh,
so I just turned
I love you.
I wrote, don't limit God. And so... Yeah. I'm not kidding. The next day, I'm like driving in West Virginia. There's hardly ever anybody on the freeways, and I never listen to the radio. I'm just driving along, and I hear that voice. And he says, Margaret, I'm going to turn this business around. It's going to happen so fast. It's going to look so easy. Mm-hmm. You're going to be tempted to keep it.
Ah, don't.
Because he could kill it as easily as he could build it. And I kid you not, I went from $15,000 a month to $150,000 a month in 2 weeks.
Wow. You know, there's as you were talking, it came to mind, an expression came to mind. I'm sure you've heard it. they're as rich as God, you know?
Right. Well, we're not as rich as God because, you know, we sold the business. People are like, you could have got a lot more if you'd held on for a year because you could have. I was like, no, if we'd have held on for a year, we'd have gotten zip.
Right.
Because he specifically said, it's time to sell the business. Yeah. And don't hang on to it.
Right.
And, you know, we had enough money to pay cash for our house here. And
nice.
But we're not rolling in it.
Well, no, it's always a risk. You talk like a person who's at the gambling table, blackjack, you know, at the Russian roulette. And, okay, that's what, all right, we're going. You know, and it is a daily risk because life is a series of decisions, isn't it? So when you have this channel that you are linked to, it seems to take the weight off of what you are doing. I mean, if you could, I'll make you laugh. Like I said, we do have to go to food shopping. We have to eat, right?
Right.
And when I even talk to the divine when I'm in front of, all right, look, I know I have to make a choice. What would you, even stupid things like that, you know? And, but it's, a lot of people have trouble in accepting this. They think, oh, she hears voices. How could you believe her?
It's a thought. It's a thought.
That's why I wanted to talk about that in the beginning. They're thoughts. Have you ever had...
To learn to discern that thought.
See,
that's... Yes. Yeah. And for me, it does come... Like, it'll kind of keep soft as gentle. It'll be accompanied by that sense of peace but not pushy, you know, and if I keep ignoring it, it'll finally stop. But and so what happens with the daily list is I'm specifically paying attention.
Yeah.
I am here.
Okay.
Tell me.
Okay.
Yeah.
So now let's go just a moment to your children. There are eight, right? And you talk about 1997, 1999, when this phenomenon started. Is that right?
Yeah, when I started praying, what should I
do? Okay,
yeah.
So what was the age of your eldest, your youngest then? 20.
He was
40 now.
Yeah, he was 26.
Older. Yeah, they were still older.
And the youngest one was 15.
Ah, the youngest was 15. There you go. So that's young still. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I write about some of my conversations with him, you know, like he loves rich people. He hates poor people. Why do people who are good always end up?
Who says this? Your youngest?
My gosh, my 15-year-old. They had all said it. They all say it at some point, you know, it's like, oh, it's the same conversation. I've had this conversation 7 times before, but, I kind of write about those conversations in the book because at one point
they're humorous, you know.
Oh my gosh, he tells me, why does God make me, you know, struggle? And I said, well, you know, it's like building your muscles, right? Like you have to build your muscles, you have to like struggle some. So, and then he said, well, my friend, I'll make up a name. I forgot his name, but my friend. Martin, his parents give him everything and he doesn't have to work.
Oh, don't you love that? I love that.
And I was like, oh, really? And he said,
I want to meet this.
And
these people.
I know. I was, so how's that working for him anyway? So like, he said, well, it's terrible. They gave him a car and he wrecked it.
There you go.
You know, they buy everything and he just loses it. And they've told him when he's 18, he's going to have to move out of the house and take care of himself.
Thank goodness.
And I said, really? How old do you think he'll do? And he said, oh, it's going to be a mess. He doesn't know how to do anything. He doesn't have a job. And I was like, because they did everything for him. He didn't have to learn how to do any of it. And I was like, really?
Mm-hmm.
Really? I think you just answered your own question.
So let me ask you a couple of things. Because when someone has a conversation, because I'm psychic, I'm a channeler, I'm a medium. So I, you know, one leg is on that side, one leg is on this side, and the conversations are very easy. Do you, have you ever, since that time, since the beginning of the voice and the inner voice, have you ever had the sensation that you are psychically tuned into people who are around you? Have you ever had that experience of a psychic phenomenon on your part, other than the conversations with the divine?
No, not for me. My husband is, but that is often one of the gifts, I think, given to children who are raised by an abusive mm-hmm. home hmm. with, you know, alcohol or drug abuse parents. Hmm. They become very connected to other people hmm. and to what they're feeling and to what's going on.
It could be.
That's not
could
me.
Be.
It I
could
do
be.
Sometimes. People will say,
that experience
please pray
in my
about
life.
This. Mm. Yeah. But yeah. you have that. So, but I do get prayer answers, you know, like mm-hmm. people will come to me and say, I'm so upset about what's going on. I can't hear what the answer is. So I will often pray for people and get an answer
there you
that
go.
I share
there
with them.
There you go. So this is still, it's similar to what I was saying. It is. It is a certain, let's say, a certain brand, a certain kind of connection with the divine. So you have your family, you have your children, and were they always brought up to speed as to what you were doing, how it came about? Did you share this with them directly right away?
Yes. And sometimes I didn't want to. Mm-hmm. And they have learned to connect themselves. You know, they have an all-stayed Christian. They have an all-stayed in
wow. Wait a minute. Now, wait.
But they listen.
Go slow.
But they listen.
Go slow. Now, what happened? You have eight children, right?
Yeah.
Did they all embrace this and espouse this? Or was there a doubting Thomas? Or how did that work?
I think when they were teenagers, they had a hard time learning to listen. But even that 15-year-old, I said to him, look, I can't answer this question for you. You're going to have to ask God. And he said, I did ask God. And I said, well, what'd he say? He said, be grateful for what you have. And I was like, well, I know he's hearing. Because that is the answer. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people get the answer. They don't like the answer.
Yeah, right.
I don't want to hear that answer.
Yeah.
So, yes, I think they all have learned that. To me, that's the whole point of church, is to learn to connect with God. Mm-hmm. And that's the whole point of raising them with some spiritual upbringing.
Wait now.
Yeah.
And well, you said the magic key word church. So let's say that that's the first time we've brought an institutional idea of religion, because you talk about church. How connected is the phenomenon that you're talking about up until now to your religious habits? I mean, really going into a church. Is it very connected? I mean, is that where your religious nature comes from?
Yes. I was told from the time I was about 7 or 8, that I could, that God would speak to me. I needed to learn to hear that.
Seven or eight?
Voice.
Wait a minute. Already? It was in 1997. We're talking as a child.
Oh, as a child. Yeah. But when did I actually really connect to and start to
I
say,
see.
Here's how I'm going to turn my life over to you. No, my first experience was the first time I went to this one particular church. I have felt like up to that point I had learned a lot about God, but that day I felt like I met him. And then I would, you know, like when I was in second and third grade, when I was upset, I would actually read my Bible.
Yeah.
I don't know what other people do. And I would feel that sense of peace when I was, but it wasn't until I was in my 20s I started to discern that voice.
Yeah, this is the same. I have had the exact same experience, 6, 7, 8 years old. And I didn't start to maybe I didn't understand, but that's when it began.
You don't understand.
That's when it began. And then I discerned it afterwards. So this is quite, it's a very personal growth. It's a very personal experience. It's very difficult to describe this to other people, and everyone has their own experiences. Have you had ever people come to you and say, look, Margaret, I don't understand what I'm supposed to be doing. I don't get it. I mean, I do this. I have this job. I'm this. Am I supposed to be like, they come to you asking you what they should be doing. What's my life purpose? What am I supposed to be doing? Has that ever happened to you?
No, because I think my books make it clear that I'm pointing you towards God.
Yeah.
Like, here's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You need to learn to hear this voice.
Yeah.
And because it's a daily thing, he changed my life, and often gradually, and then sometimes in like write your life on the internet.
Okay. Now
make it a book.
All right.
So sometimes it was gradual. Here's what I want you to do today. Here's what I want you to do today. But other times.
Okay.
More.
So you,
here's how I think about it.
Okay. Go ahead,
Claudia. So imagine I'm in heaven.
Of course you are.
Mm-hmm. Whatever you think heaven is, I'm in heaven, and there's this creator, divine being, energy ball of love, whatever it is up there. And we're all up there. And so are we like running to that being and saying, oh my gosh, I have so much to do, so much to do. Can you help me here? Or are we saying, you know, I love what you're committed to, what you're bringing about. How can I help you? And so that's when my life really changed, when I stopped saying, here's my list of things I have to do. How can you help me with it? And began to become, what do you want me to do today?
Well, see, now this is what I meant, because you asked the divine directly, what do you want me to do? And I have trouble with people asking me what they have to be doing. And it's very difficult for people to take responsibility like that. And it's not a very common. People want to be told as if they want to abdicate all of their responsibilities, give it up, and say, I have to be told what I am meant to do. This, however, Margaret, let's imagine a doctor. Right. I have one of my clients is a very well-known physician, and she's remarkable with the type of work that she does. Nonetheless, despite all of her success, all of her rewards, all of that, she still has this strong element of doubt as to what am I meant to be doing? And, you know, it's as if she wants to hear, no, you shouldn't be a doctor. You should be a high priestess.
Shaman?
Right, a shaman. That's what I'm saying. So it is very, I have trouble in understanding where they come from, where their head is, you know, and I literally don't understand the question. And so this is something I'm learning now, because every time I get that question, my mouth opens and I'm thinking, what? You know,
yeah.
It's not that you have to be an Indian chief, a beggar, you can be anything, but that's different from what your soul is doing.
Right. So I hear what you're saying. So I have kind of two answers. Okay. You're right. Because most of us aren't being told to go off and be Mother Teresa in India. You know, we're more helping people on a day-to-day level. We're bringing messages. And that's how the divine treats us as individuals. He's not trying to find, you know, some big following. I had a friend who had an even larger family than mine. And she said, I want to do this, Margaret. So I went to God and I said, I want to do what you want me to do today, God. I need you to know I have like 12 loads of laundry. And he said, he said, well, you do what you have to do today, but whatever you do, do it with kindness. And often it's, for me, it's just these calls, or just sometimes it's, you know, I can tell kind of fun, unusual, wow, I wish I had a story like that, but they only happen once every couple of years. You put them in one book, it looks like a lot.
Yeah.
But yeah. So, you know, once it was go to town at a certain time, and it was like 5 o'clock. So I'm canning tomatoes. I'm trying to get out of there by 5 o'clock. It was 5:15. And as I go to town, I see somebody hitchhiking. And I thought, is that why I'm here? And it was like, yeah. And so I pick it up. I thought it was a woman, but it was a guy. And he's telling me the story. He'd been walking 30 miles that day. No one had given him a ride.
Oh, dear.
I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to this town. It's 20 miles away. There's a truck stop. I'll drop you there. And so as I dropped him, I could feel that voice say, give him $20.
Oh.
And I happen to have cash. I never have cash.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right. I don't usually do that. But so I'm like, I said, here's $20. And he gets out of the car. And as I pulled away, I heard that voice say, see how much I love him. And so this kind of bothered me a little bit because I'm selfish and I like to get my sleep. And so now I wasn't going to get to bed until late that night. And I kept thinking, well, how come you asked me to go? I mean, he'd been walking 30 miles. There must be 1,000 people on either side of that road. You could have asked to give him that ride. So why did you why'd you ask me to do it? And he said, well, were you blessed for it? And I said, yeah, feeling that love was a blessing. But then I couldn't let it go. Like, even years later, I'm like, how come you made me go? And so
You're funny.
And then he said, because I could trust you to go.
Yeah.
That's why I asked you. And so this is my message, Claudia. Mm-hmm. I want more people to do this than I wouldn't have had to go. I'd get more sleep. So if everybody got up every day and said, what do you want me to do today, God? That poor guy would have gotten a ride a whole lot sooner.
Well, you're barking up the wrong tree. I don't even have a car.
Okay, so yeah, I would be giving you the ride. Okay.
But I could cook a mean meal.
Oh my gosh, and I hate to cook, so that would work perfectly. Yeah.
Boy, this is wonderful. Sorry?
Do you cook Italian?
Yeah. Well, I cook, I grew up Italian. You know.
So you do that eggplant parmesan?
Well, yeah.
You call it gravy or sauce?
I call it sauce. I never call it gravy, but you know, I'm going to make your mouth water. You see, in this neck of the woods, if I go to the supermarket, what do I see? And you see this in Italian grocery places. You have cooked food that you can pick up and bring home.
Just buy.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And it's really good. So I like, if I'm having guests, I will cook, but it's easier for me to throw things together and just, you know, just eat. I'm a good cook when I want to be.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. But there's so many other things I like to do. So if I could get rid of the cooking, you know, but if I used to, when I was young, I used to say, boy, I want to meet a man who knows how to cook. And then the list got longer. Knows how to give a massage.
Yeah. So before I met my husband, when he said, God has said, you're going to meet the man you're going to marry next fall. That's kind of how my book begins, mm-hmm. that third one. At one point, and I was like, well, no, thank you. I'd prefer not to get married again. But at one point, I said, okay, I'm accepting that I'm going to get married again. What's he like? And he said, well, why don't you make a list of the top 10 things you want in a man? And I did. And he's everything on the list. And I was like, at one point, I was like, you know, God, I thought some things went without saying. They're not on the list.
So, I mean, we're laughing here because this is the way life is, you know, and my life has always been like that, talking to, you know, I could remember, I tell this story a little bit when I was that age, 6, 7, and I was holding my dad's hand and we were in church and I was looking up at the frescoes and everything and all these spirits were coming out of the pictures and were dancing, you know, and I was in awe of all this stuff going on up there. And I'm thinking, why doesn't anybody see this? And what are they looking at the altar for, you know? And so at one point I must have been in a trance because my dad kept pulling my hand. You know, Claudia, what's happening? And I said, no, and I couldn't talk. I didn't want to talk in the middle of mass. But that's how it started. All of a sudden you start, like children have playmates and spirits and things like that, angels. And that's what my world was populated like. It was sort of like a fiction novel all around me, you know. But what is hard, I don't know if it happens to you, it's hard thinking that other people haven't had that experience. And I'm thinking, how come they don't see it? Don't they see?
Right.
You know?
Right.
Don't they hear?
My sister-in-law sees auras, and she thought everybody saw auras.
Yeah, Yeah.
Like she's like, I mean, she thought, well, I'm seeing him. I guess everybody else does. So it was like she was in her 20s before she realized. Yeah.
Well, the aura.
Everybody sees
and
that.
This is what I forgot to ask you in the middle, in the beginning, because you're a Reiki healer and I myself as well. So when we talk about aura, an aura of someone, what people take for granted, what is that exactly?
Well, I do think it's that energy that they're surrounding them with. And that's why whatever their emotions are sort of creating this sense of either darkness or lightness or green or blue. There is a sense there is what I get from an aura. But for me, I mostly have a sense of the energy, just the energy through my hands and the energy.
You use your hands. Yeah. Interesting. There's a lot of meat on this fire, Margaret. There's a lot to talk to. Thank you so much for this conversation.
Thanks for having me.
And we will talk again sometime. I appreciate you
coming.
That'd be great. Bye-bye, Margaret.
Thanks. Bye, Claudia.